All right. We ready?
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's do this. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to episode 2 of our yet-to-be-named podcast. Tonight's episode is fueled by Audible Ale by Red Hook, a crushable ale brewed in collaboration with Dan Patrick. My co-host was kind enough to bring a six-pack through the studio. Co-host?
I'm your co-host for the evening, John. We're running a two-man weave this evening. Running a little bit short, Matt was unable to make it to tonight's recording. But we're going to do our best and make it happen. So in the last podcast, when we got together and really got this concept started, we wanted to record based off of Decision 2014 with LeBron's big move to head back to Cleveland. So we thought for this podcast, we'd just go ahead and start with the NBA in general. Specifically with, as far as LeBron news goes, they did have, kind of decision 2.1. LeBron put out on social media maybe a week or so ago, talking about what number he wanted to wear. Keep the number 6 in Miami, go back to the number 23.
I saw that and I was thinking, the 23 has been kind of played out. And honestly, to me, I don't ever want there to be a discussion as to who's the greatest ever, because we all know who the greatest player in the NBA ever was and ever will be. So just leave the 23 alone out of respect.
Yeah, and I think, the interesting thing there, Michael Jordan did come out and say that he was fine, with that. LeBron went back and talked about how that number should be retired, across the league. And I agree fully that MJ is the best player ever. It's hard for, for this generation, LeBron generation, KD generation to understand that. But if you've had a chance to watch, basketball from the late 80s to the mid 90s, I mean, there's no question. I mean, the Michael Jordan, those Bulls teams, I mean, you don't win 70 games, on a fluke.
It was utter domination back in the day, and I hated Michael Jordan.
Me too.
I was never an MJ fan. If anything, I was an MJ detractor back in the day, but you look back and you watch some of those playoff domination films, like it was no question. And you could just tell in certain athletes who has that killer instinct, like Michael Jordan, a Tiger Woods, who else, man? Just someone that's got that, will not be denied the victory.
It seems like all the players from that era, you think about Isaiah Thomas. Dude plays on pretty much a broken ankle, during the playoffs and wills his team to a win, in a playoff series. Larry Bird, players like that have that killer instinct. I think the only player that comes to mind right off the top of my mind, in this age is Kobe Bryant. Outside of him, I don't think you have, an alpha, to that level, where it's they're going to get the job done no matter what.
I would agree, and I don't even really like Kobe Bryant, but he's got that whatever it is. I hate to say something cliche, but it's the X factor. It's the intangible that few athletes in any given sport have. You could even say Peyton Manning. Manning.
Yeah.
And maybe that's just me being old and just thinking, the greats from my time are the greatest of all time. But who knows? Anyway, so what about the ripple effect, having LeBron decide to go home?
Yeah, well, when we kind of touched on it in the last, the last episode, and I think that one of the big talking points that I really wanted us to dive into was the Kevin Love trade scenarios. I think one of the big things, and we'll see, once it all plays out, just how big of a piece, getting Kevin Love was, as far as LeBron deciding to sign, with Cleveland. I think that is, no matter how much, every side, whether it's Minnesota or Cleveland, no matter how much they want to downplay it, I think that Kevin Love coming to Cleveland, was one of the biggest, reasons that LeBron considered, coming back. I mean, he had been to the finals, three straight times in 3 straight years? In the playoffs, all 4 years he was in Miami, won 2 in a row, went to a third, in a row. So I don't think he was just going to get up and leave just because he wanted to, go back to Cleveland.
I'm so glad they didn't win that third, though, because that just goes to, it speaks on well, Michael had a three-peat, you know, LeBron's got a three-peat. Like, I'm so glad we don't have to have that discussion now. And honestly, the Spurs are a tough team to beat, man. The Popovich system, they got it going on. The it's fun. It's been fun to watch them age in the NBA. I can remember, you know, back in 05 watching them lose to the Lakers on a last-second Robert Horry miracle. And I was thinking, man, this team is legit. They're going to be hard to beat. And here we are, what, 9 years later?
Yeah, and I think that's the thing. Every year, I mean, especially in the last couple of years, I've looked at San Antonio and just figured that this is the year that they finally just degrade, you know, and age catches up to them, and they finally will not make it to the playoffs or not make it out of the first or second round. But here they are every year. I mean, they just got done, you know, losing, you know, a last second shot, you know, that game six Ray Allen three.
Oh man, but
you know, where they had the rope out, they had the champagne ready.
They were ready to pop the champ.
Yeah.
You can't tell me though, given the scenario, okay, you have one shot. And you're going to say, okay, what's the best case scenario? I'm going to say Tim Duncan 15 feet away facing the basket. You know, and for whatever awful reason, that just didn't go down, man. And to correct myself from a few moments ago, it was 2004, the Robert Horry miracle with 0.4 seconds left on the clock.
Yeah, big shot Bob. So, but yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, getting back to the LeBron and Kevin Love situation, I think that I still think that Cleveland probably has their package offers the most potential to Minnesota. I think that if it were up to me, and I'm looking at building something in a super small market like Minnesota, I would, you know, I don't know. I guess now I'm actually kind of torn on it. I think Cleveland does offer the highest potential if they are going to offer, you know, Wiggins, if they are going to offer Bennett, and if they are going to offer at least one future first round pick. I mean, granted, that's going to be pretty much a garbage first rounder because they're going, you know, Cleveland's going to go into the playoffs and possibly deep.
So let's say they theoretically pull it off and they get rid of Wiggins and Bennett. Aren't we looking at the same situation we had in Miami with a big three, essentially, except Kyrie Irving is a lot younger than who do they have? D-Wade? Now, D-Wade's shooting guard, so they have Chalmers?
Yeah, I mean, and that's
an aging point guard?
I think that illustrates exactly why, you know, it helped LeBron to enter into the discussion about maybe he won't stay in Miami. I mean, you are trading whoever they're going to run out there at, you know, at point guard, whether it's, you know, Norris Cole or Mario Chalmers. I mean, both of those guys, I mean, those are not starting point guards on, you know, a championship level team. I mean, LeBron or, you know, a superstar will cover that up. I mean, you look at KD and how he's able to coexist with Russell Westbrook, who's, you know, on the opposite, you know, end of the spectrum, comparing to Miami's point guard situation,
or fail to coexist.
Yeah, that's true too.
No, I just think that the main attraction to go back to Cleveland was that they've got younger stars. You know, they've got younger talent, and the window is far greater. It's a much larger window to win there as opposed to staying in Miami with old talent, you know. It's not Kevin Love isn't old by any means, but you're trading away that youth in exchange for a proven current superstar, you know, and you're rolling the dice again. And you know, is Irving, Love, and LeBron any better than Wade, Bosh, and LeBron?
I mean, I think without a question it is. I think that Kevin Love is probably, well, you can't call him a two-way player because he doesn't necessarily play good defense, but offensively, you know, he's a 25 and 12 type of guy.
Numbers.
You know, he's got range out to three. I mean, he's a legit stretch four. He is the stretch four, you know, in the NBA right now.
He's the stretch four not named Dirk Nowitzki.
Exactly. I mean, he's Dirk, you know, in a younger frame. And, you know, I think that if you make the comparison, if you're trading, you know, pieces, I would take Kevin Love over Chris Bosh. I would take Kevin Love over Chris Bosh next year, and I would definitely take Kevin Love over Chris Bosh over the course of that ridiculous max contract that Bosh got.
You're right.
For 5 years.
And I agree, but do you take Kevin Love over Bennett and Wiggins?
I mean, I think
over the next 3 years, sure.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing, too. You have to look at it, and you have to separate the fact that for Cleveland, they're looking, I think they would be looking at it that they are opening their championship window now, and so they want to you know, get through it as effectively as possible. And you can't afford to do that with a you know, with hanging on to prospects. Wiggins might be great. You know, we know that he can, you know, he can jump out of the gym. We know that he's, you know, hyper athletic, but we also know that he's got to work on a jump shot. We don't know how he's going to play defense, you know, at the NBA level. Same thing with Bennett. I mean, I think it's a lot of people, the general consensus is that, you know, Bennett's a bust. After 1 year, I mean, you can't really draw that conclusion. He came into, you know, the summer league a lot leaner, and he looked a lot, you know, a lot more explosive. He still doesn't look like he's deserving of the number one overall pick, but I mean, there's plenty of number one overalls that don't pan out. So I think it's unfair to compare, you know, Bennett in that regard. But at any rate, if I'm Cleveland, I would still do the deal. If I'm LeBron, I think that's why I went to Cleveland. It's because, you know that the end is a championship, and the means, if it's Bennett, if it's whoever. I mean, it doesn't matter. I don't think there's anybody on that roster. Even Kyrie Irving, I don't think that, you know, any of those pieces are untradeable if you're trying to get, you know, Kevin Love and pair it up and try to make another big three.
Who else has been offered? I know Chicago was trying to make a move.
Yeah, you've got
Taj Gibson.
Yeah, Taj Gibson. I forget the name of the power forward. Maybe we can, maybe we can find it real quick. But it's, I want to say, is it Mirotić? I can't think of his name, but I think it's something in that vein. He's been talked about as probably the best power forward prospect coming out of Europe for the past several years. I mean, he's almost got that Thiago Splitter, you know, kind of feel to him, where he's a big deal, and they were just waiting. You know, a team was just waiting to get him into their team.
So I have pulled up the information. This is where we would typically turn to our newly appointed news guy, the new news guy. However, he was unable to make it due to real life responsibilities. Let's see. Bulls have reportedly offered big man Taj Gibson and a pair of rookies, former Real Madrid forward Nikola Mirotić.
Yeah, there you go. That's
and
it.
Former Creighton Blue Jays forward Doug McDermott.
And, you know, here's the thing. When, you know, when we talked about this, briefly, it's Chicago offers you kind of a 2 years in the future type of deal. I think Taj Gibson is a legit power forward. He's a proven power forward. So if you're looking to replace, you know, a Kevin Love directly into your starting rotation, you know, the Chicago deal makes a lot of sense there, you know, because you're going to, not going to have that as big of a drop off. Mirotić and McDermott are going to be your longer term prospects. You know, it's going to be similar to Wiggins and Bennett, you know, in that regard. So, you know, and I think another discussion there is, if you're looking to really compete, is it sensible to try to be decent? You know, I mean, look at the Hawks last year. I mean, I'll admit, when we were going into the tail end of the regular season, I was hoping that they didn't make the playoffs.
You know, and as soon as Horford went down with the torn pec, I was thinking the same thing, but it's tough, man, because I feel like having a mediocre Hawks team for the past decade has contributed, along with the one and done rule, to really just disenchant me with the NBA altogether. Like, I used to be a diehard fan, you know, and now it's just kind of taken a back burner to football. But I think that becoming relevant, making the playoffs, it does make it easier to land people in free agency. But the problem we've run into over these past 10 years is that no one wants to come play in Atlanta.
Yeah, and that's always going to be a mystery to me. I mean, there's so many NBA players and just sports players in general that live in Atlanta. I mean, it's viewed as a great, you know, as a great destination. It's viewed as a great place to live. It's a great metropolitan area. But, you know, for the life of me, yeah, I also can't understand why, you know, nobody wants to take the Hawks' money. I mean, I can understand, you know, 5, 6, 7 years ago when we had that fiasco with the 500 owners and, Belkin was trying to, you know, sue the team and do all these different things. I mean, there was all that unrest. But you know, when you look at it now, you've got Danny Ferry doing a really good job as far as being a GM and managing cap space. Budenholzer looks like he's going to be able to implement a Popovich style offense and defensive concepts. And I mean, you know, the Hawks pushed, you know, the number one seed, you know, a legit Pacers team to seven games, you know, as an eight seed. So
yeah, I don't know, man, it's tough. The Spirit Group, you know, that's all behind us now, and we're a big market with a brand new stadium. Essentially, when was Phillips built? 2005.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it's less than 10 years old, I think.
Right. It's basically a brand new stadium, you know, in the heart of Atlanta. It doesn't make sense. But moving along, have you heard about Delonte West?
I have.
Our favorite herpes sore on his face. Our favorite laughing stock punching bag story.
Yeah, I have a special place in my heart for Delonte West. You know, he's ever since he did that that segment for Jim Rome's old ESPN2 show, when he went with the now infamous hot sauce in my bag.
Oh yes, and shout out to Mr. Hot Sauce in My Bag.
Exactly.
My swag.
then you have the trains, planes, or automobiles. I mean, he was a great soundbite. And I think he's also, he's a serviceable point guard. I think he's gotten kind of a raw deal, you know, with that whole, you know, waking up and going, turning into Antonio Banderas, and carrying, you know, guns in a, you know, guitar case and going down the freeway thing. But,
and the doing LeBron's mom thing.
Well, yeah, allegedly. But
let's not forget about that one.
Yeah, he didn't last at Cleveland very long, so. But yeah, I mean, I think that I'd love to see him, get another chance. You know, where was he at? He was in Dallas for the season.
I think he was last with the Mavericks. He spent some time on Boston's roster. But I honestly think he would make a good addition to an already deep Clippers team.
Yeah, and it makes sense there. You know, they need, they're going to need some quality minutes, you know, at some point, you know, backing up Chris Paul.
Yeah, CP can't play 42 minutes a night.
Yeah, and I think that he would be, he's a good. You could do a lot worse than having somebody like Delonte West as your backup point guard.
Well, I just happen to have this stat handy here. Playing in China last year for the Fujian Sturgeons, Delonte averaged 22.5 points, 5.8 rebounds, and 5.3 assists in 33 games. Which, granted, he's in China. Competition, you know, is not as fierce, maybe. They all wear Stephon Marbury shoes.
Yes.
And, yeah, but, hey, that's legit, though, man. The numbers are pretty solid.
And, I mean, that's the thing. Like, you know, you can knock, you know, the level of competition. You still got to hustle a little bit to score 22 a game. You still got to hustle a little bit to average, you know, 5 assists, 5 rebounds. I mean, that's not...
From the point guard position.
Yeah.
And 5 rebounds. Like, hey, man, I'll take 22 and 5.
Yeah, I mean, that's some Jason Kidd, you know, in his prime type of numbers. Not as much scoring, you know, but I think that, you know, I think it shows that, you know, he can at least, you know, he's better than, you know, players in the NBA DL probably, you know.
Most likely. You remember when Allen Iverson played in Turkey for a season?
Yeah.
But he didn't do anything at all?
Yeah, he was just cashing checks, you know, trying to, you know, pay off his jewelry loans and stuff like that.
Man, I wanted him to succeed so bad.
Yeah, I think, you know, he's a really interesting situation, and I think he's a classic, you know, warning sign, you know, for young athletes. I mean, he came up, you know, got all this money, didn't have, you know,
guidance,
management, you know, life management in place, and you know, you lose it as fast as you make it.
Didn't have anyone to talk him out of getting a neck tattoo.
Yeah, exactly. You know, neck tats. I mean, it's just, you know, there's only one way that can go, and that's, you know, that's bad. So.
Speaking of basketball in developing basketball, well, not developing countries, but developing basketball countries, wasn't there another kid that's trying to bypass the he's going to play in China for a year because he wasn't academically eligible?
Yeah, I can't think of the guy's name. He's a, I want to say he's a, you know, he was a McDonald's All-American type. He was a big-time recruit. And no matter where he went, he was gonna be academically ineligible. There was gonna be issues with that. You know, so it was. Oh, he was gonna go to SMU. That's where it was, and he wasn't gonna be able to get on the court because he was gonna be academically ineligible. So rather than go to junior college, community college, what have you, he decided to go right to a pro league of sorts. You know, to go over to China. Play for a year, which will make him age eligible for the NBA draft in 2015.
So this just in from the Washington Post, top basketball recruit Emmanuel, I'm going to butcher this name, Mudiay, M-U-D-I-A-Y, turns down Larry Brown and SMU to play professionally overseas to essentially go Brandon Jennings and skip the, still serve the 1 year between high school timeout, as we'll call it, and make the jump immediately afterwards.
I mean, and this is something that really, kind of strikes a nerve with me. It's it doesn't make sense to me. You know, I don't understand. Like, I totally understand wanting to ensure that your athletes are physically developed, enough to be able to, play at the next level. I mean, there's a reason why. You don't want NFL players college players coming out of college after 2 years, because I think a 19-year-old would probably die on the field when getting hit by 25, 26, 27-year-old men.
Right.
So I get that.
My bad. I totally got this loud-ass Braves bottle over. I'm trying to, discreetly open this bottle of beer.
That's all good. I'm about to do the same.
My bad. So, yeah, man, what do they play? How many games do they play at the high school level?
I don't even know. It's not enough.
To suffer through an 82-game season banging, this kid is 6'5", native of the Congo, so I would assume he'd be banging around with, grown men in the post.
Yeah, I mean,
got that grown man strength.
Yeah, it's just a bad idea. I saw a picture today. I was looking at the top Atlanta Hawks players of all time, and I saw a picture of Kevin Willis boxing out Manute Bol.
Man,
and I mean, that's what would happen. That's what it would look like. I mean, it would be a grown ass man just breaking a dude in half.
Kevin Willis
in the
was
post.
Cut though, man. Like, that dude could have been in action flicks opposite Carl Weathers and Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah, and another Carl. He could have been. He could have arm wrestled another Carl Malone. I mean, the two of those guys. I mean, that was. I mean, look. That's another quick, quick look back. The power forwards of, our '90s NBA with a Charles Oakley. Versus, this generation's power forward, Josh Smith can play power forward now.
Man, the game can play power forward now.
Yeah, exactly.
Black Wall Street recording artist, a.k.a. Josh Smith. No, the yesteryear's power forwards would have chewed these kids up and spit them out. Are you kidding me? Kevin Durant would have just been relegated to a wingman role. You know, he wouldn't even think about playing around in the paint.
He'd have been Robert Horry. He wouldn't have gone into the paint because he would have got. I mean, he would have gotten his bell rung. I watched the 30 for 30 bit on the Detroit Bad Boys, and I was amazed at. I had forgotten exactly how rough those teams played, and they were showing the Bulls, matchups, where they created the Jordan rules, which is basically just mug Michael Jordan anytime he got into the paint.
Man, that Detroit team was bad. Bill Laimbeer, Joe Dumars, Isaiah.
Yeah, Rick Mahorn.
Rick Mahorn.
I mean, those
Mahorn
dudes were nasty.
Was a beast.
Yeah, I mean, that was a team that... I mean, they did exactly what they wanted to do, and they just imposed their physical will on people. And again, getting back to the whole thing about being ready, physically, I think that's the only sense in that one and done rule. I don't think that 1 year, will necessarily get a player physically ready. But at least it's better than nothing. You have way too many players that came out, way too early. I mean, you look at a guy like Jermaine O'Neal, who came out, and there was no sense in him coming out. You know, look at Sebastian Telfair, you know, players like that that had the talent, but they just, they don't, you know, they don't give themselves a chance to develop, you know, either physically or mentally, you know, or skill wise, and they just end up, you know, getting, you know, just becoming wasted, you know, wasted talent, you know, once they get to the league.
So should we stay on the NBA or should we go ahead and shake things up a little bit?
Whatever you feel like.
Well, because, you know, college football is right around the corner. And we had had an interesting discussion over Google Chat one day. And we were talking about, well, we got this 18 playoff system coming in. And we were basically speaking on, well, it's bad for, and I think we touched on this last episode.
Yeah, we did.
It's bad for everyone else. It's good for the SEC because when you look at it, if you were to match up the top five teams out of the 12-pack versus the top five teams in the SEC in a given year, I take SEC 5-0.
Yeah, and I thought, I wanted to give the due diligence. You know, I mean, I think that that's my role in a lot of our conversations to kind of look at the, you know, look at the other options. But when I sat down and tried to peg the top five Pac-12 teams and the top five SEC teams, it was hard for me to not say that, you know, the SEC would win at least four of the five, if not all five. And that would probably be in any given year. I mean, I don't think the SEC would do worse than 3-2 in any season.
No, you'd be hard-pressed to get me to say 4-1 even. So let's give it a quick rundown. What do you think? Oregon, number one?
Yeah, we'll say, I mean, let's talk, we're talking about just like next year?
Yeah, we're talking next
year.
Yeah,
so let's say, yeah, Oregon, number one. Yeah.
UCLA, number two?
Yeah, UCLA, maybe Stanford. I mean, maybe Stanford, you know, kind of a toss-up between
those two.
All
right, so let's say Stanford.
Okay.
So Oregon, Stanford, UCLA.
Right, then you have, I think that kind of goes to show.
USC?
Maybe. Yeah. I mean, they'll be there. I mean, I think you can put them in at four or five just because they do have the supreme talent, you know, recruiting kids out of you know, Southern Cal, and still having some of that mystique, so you can still pull, you know, some good talent. So I think USC gets in there at four or five.
Okay, so let's say USC's on the board. Who else do you put?
I mean,
I don't take the Washington. Washington's pretty whack. Neither Arizona team.
No,
yet.
I mean, it's kind of, you don't take Oregon State, you know. You
don't, man, Oregon State's weak, man.
They're going to fall off. You know,
I take UW before I take Oregon State.
Yeah, I think I do that too. I'll take the Arizona team that...
Rich Rod?
That Rich Rod is coaching. Yeah.
Word.
Which one? Arizona State? I don't know.
Who fucking cares? Yeah, so here's the thing. All right, so Oregon versus Alabama.
I don't... You're a homer. If you pick Oregon, you just are.
Nah, well, it's Alabama all day.
Yeah, the only people picking or voting for Oregon in that matchup would be living in the 360 or the 503. I mean, or whatever the you know, whatever the area code is in Eugene. It's a non-contest. No. Alabama wins handily.
Heavily. Okay, so second place team.
So yeah, UCLA.
Well, UCLA versus who do you think? Auburn, LSU.
Yeah, I mean, probably next year. I mean, Auburn's returning Nick Marshall. They lost Trey Mason, but they're going to have... I mean, that offense is ridiculous.
I read somewhere that Nick Marshall... There's only two returning quarterbacks from last year's class because we graduated Murray.
Yeah.
The Florida quarterback. What's his... Driesen?
Driscoll. Jeff Driscoll.
Driscoll. Okay, so Driscoll is the other one. So Marshall and Driscoll.
It?
I believe so.
That's crazy. I thought they would have had a couple more, but I mean, it doesn't matter. You know, if you say Auburn's number two against
UCLA.
UCLA. I don't. It may be close, but you know, I kept on saying that about Auburn, that somebody's gonna call them out on that gimmicky offense that they had, and then I watch them keep running for 350 yards against everybody and. Everybody knows what's going on. That they, you know, everybody knows they're going to run the ball, and they're still just going to keep feeding, you know, Mason the rock, and they're going to get 300 something yards on the ground every game. So
I was really wishing that we got to see what year was that with. We did get to see Oregon and Auburn. It was Nick Fairley's year.
That was Nick Fairley. Yeah, that was the what's his name? I forget the running back. He ended up transferring. due to academic, you know, issues the following year, but he had the one where he popped off the ground, nobody touched him, and he, you know, ended up running running rampant, and nobody touched him.
That score was not indicative of the manhandling that happened that game.
No, and I mean, that's the thing. You know, you'll have, you know, that's where you have, you know, statistics tell whatever story is convenient for your argument. You know, you'll have Oregon and Pac-12 fans will say, hey, we took the best of the best, you know, the best out of the SEC, and we only lost by, whatever, 3 or 4 points, you know. But that doesn't mean that's a tough story.
How did they scored? It was a special teams play late in the game when it was like it was already over. There was like maybe 6 minutes to go in the fourth. And I want to say, I wish I could recall. This is where the news guy would come in handy. But right. The point is that okay? So we take Auburn over UCLA.
Yeah, I think so. I think that would be a more competitive game. And maybe Auburn isn't the second best team out of the SEC. I think they probably still are.
Who else? LSU?
Yeah, I mean LSU is always solid every year. So,
okay. So either way, LSU beats UCLA handily.
I think so.
Where did Mettenberger go?
He went to the NFL.
Yeah,
he got
dumbass.
Mettenberger. I can't remember where he got drafted, but he was in an Alabama bar, and some Alabama fans were getting in his face and jawing off about Roll Tide. Mettenberger. Shout outs to Oconee County High School, a product of the old neighborhood there.
Alma mater.
But the guy's jawing at him, you know, doing Roll Tide, all this and that, and Mettenberger wasn't going to reply. He finally replied something, you know, totally harmless, you know, like a, yeah, whatever. And then the heckler's buddy came in and punched Mettenberger, blindsided him with a little punch.
A little sucker punch?
Yeah, so, yeah.
While he wasn't looking?
Yeah, that's the random Zant and Mettenberger, you know, signing there, or sighting, rather.
Nice. I wonder where he went. News guy, can you check on that for us? Thanks. So, at number three, who do you got from the SEC?
Well, you're going to have whoever...
South Carolina?
Whoever it is out of the... You know, if you're going to say LSU's a two, then I think Auburn's a three.
Okay, so LSU, Auburn at 2-3.
Yeah.
That would be the one. That would be the one. The Stanford game. Stanford versus LSU or Stanford versus Auburn.
And you know why? It's because Stanford looks like an SEC team.
I know. I think we mentioned that.
Yeah, and that's, you know, it's, you know, they play good defense.
Running game.
They run the ball well, and they pass enough, you know, to get by when they need to. So, you know, big ups to Stanford, you know, for being able to keep that program moving. I mean, you know, props to David Shaw, you know, bringing on that talent and coaching it up.
What are they calling themselves down there? Like the geek mob or something? Like the nerd mafia? Something, man.
Something like that. But yeah, I think that's whoever Stanford would play. I think that would be the most likely game that the SEC would drop. In that conference matchup.
So number four, you got Missouri out of the SEC.
You know, that's another tough one. I mean, I wish I could have found that that college football, you know, preview for tonight's show, but apparently, and again, college football isn't that important around here because it's already pulled from the shelves. It's not even August 1st yet, so
yeah.
I mean, just off the top of my head, I don't like Missouri as much. They lost Coney Ealy. You know, they lost Michael Sam. So you got two great defensive players there. I think I thought their big receiving threat, Doriel Green Beckham or something like that. I thought he got into trouble and he transferred. I don't think Missouri would do so well. I like if you're talking about the four, you got to throw Georgia into the mix.
It's hard for me not to say Georgia.
I mean, I think they would be either the fourth or the fifth best team coming out of that. Coming out of the SEC.
The point is here's the point though. Georgia, University of Georgia, me not just being a homer, but is matching up against either a Rich Rod Arizona team, Oregon State. Who else do we say at the five?
Either Washington team, you know.
Yeah, and that's a 14-point blowout.
Probably. I mean, you have. Let's just look at it and be honest about it. The SEC's fourth, fifth, or maybe sixth best team, wherever you want to slot Georgia. Maybe even lower. Maybe seven or eight. Maybe we do take a year to develop that defense.
The only way we get beat is because our defensive backs are so terrible. And you say we match up against either Washington team. You know, they throw the ball well, and that's how they wind up catching us in a shootout. But the point is that the Pac-12 has literally been picking on a Tennessee team for the past 3 years.
Yeah, and that's whack. That's just stupid, and I'm tired of hearing that argument. You know,
It's to pad the stats. Yeah. Like, well, we're 9-12 in the 2000s, but yeah, how many of those were to a weak-ass Tennessee team?
Yeah, I mean, Tennessee hasn't been relevant in the, you know, in the Eastern Division ever since Oregon. Yeah, and that's, I mean, it's like, come on, man. You can't hang your hat on beating the fourth best team out of the SEC East. I mean, that's just stupid. That's not even worth talking about. But, you know, getting back to the point about Georgia, I mean, you talk about a wealth of talent. Todd Gurley is on the Heisman watch. He is going to be in, you know, he's on the watch list for the best offensive player and the best running back in the country. That's just our number one. And then you have
we get Keith
wealth.
Marshall back.
You have a wealth of running backs behind him. I mean, this is going to be, this to me is about as close if everybody, you know, hits the field, stays healthy. This is going to be what USC was in the mid to late 90s when they had dudes that were number one, like parade All-Americans that aren't even getting on the field at running back because they're so stacked.
As long as we can stay out of trouble.
Yeah.
That's key as well.
And so far we've been doing okay. I think so far we've had, we kicked off three quarters of our starting secondary. I know we lost two guys to arrest. We lost one guy who was part of that check cashing stupid scheme. He got popped for something else, so he's off the team. And then there's some guy that just today caught a DUI. He was going to be like in the linebacker rotation. So, I mean, Steve Spurrier, I've come to appreciate him more and more. And he's right, man. You know, it's a good thing to schedule Georgia early because you can always count on a couple players being suspended. And this year's no different.
What a dick. Who points that out?
Hey, you know, the old ball coach does it. You know, you got to admit, man, I mean, he's right about that. You know, we got to get things figured out, or we just got to be able to, you know, recruit those real, you know, mega five-star ballers, and then it would, you know, more justify them being, you know, knuckleheads off the field.
So you just hedge your bet with more questionable characters.
Well, yeah. I guess it's easy being a fan to say that, you know, so.
Right. I just pulled up the SB Nation article. Dismissed defensive lineman Jonathan Taylor, July 23rd. Aggravated assault after an incident with his girlfriend. Seems to be the popular thing these days. Ray slapped his woman up.
You know, yeah. And there's so much discussion about, well, maybe she had instigated it. You know, Stephen A. Smith just got in, you know, in hot water over that, you know, accidentally suggesting that maybe she brought it upon herself. I mean, it's about as, you know, as clear as day. You just don't do that to a woman. I mean, unless she's like brandishing a firearm, you just don't need to do that.
Exactly. Like Chris Rock said, you know, I'd never, ever, ever, ever hit a woman, but I'd shake the shit out of one.
Yeah, I mean, you could do something. You can exert, you know, your dominance and say, hey, you know, this isn't going to be how it goes down. But you don't need to knock somebody out stone cold in a Las Vegas elevator. I'm sorry, a Reno elevator, and then, you know, and think that's going to be okay. And, you know, that's another good topic that we could talk about, the fact that Ray Rice got, you know, a 2-game suspension, you know, for putting hands on his then fiance, where, you know, compared to, you know, some other players. I mean, granted, they're repeat offenders, but come on, man. You lose Josh Gordon for a season because he's a pot smoker? Come on.
Man, well, that's a whole nother issue, man. Would you rather have Josh Gordon gone for a season for smoking pot, or would you rather have Kellen Winslow gone? Well, I guess his career was over with anyway, but found in a Target parking lot smoking that spice.
Yeah, and, you know.
Found him. You heard about that, man? They found him in a Target parking lot with his pants around his ankles in a compromising position with not just one tub of mayonnaise.
What would that make for a better story?
You know. Two tubs of Vaseline.
Hey, you know, like we said, man, that's just how Private Winslow gets down, man. He needs two tubs because that's just how he gets after it.
Man, shout out to Ricky Clark. That fool likes to use both hands and gain a stroke.
I know. Shout out. Yeah, what up, Ricky? But you know, that's just. To me, when that story happened, I mean, that's one of those things where you just have to wonder, like, is this the Onion that I'm reading, or is this real life?
Man, you can't make that up.
You know, and the fact that, you know, after all of that went down, you know, he said that he was lost. He was looking for a Boston market.
Man,
I mean, it just didn't make any sense.
Rotisserie chicken, man.
Yeah, he just, you know, he was a little too nervous. He didn't know if he wanted the 3-piece or the 5-piece, so he had to rub one out. Yeah, you know, so we can kind of, you know, get a cool, you know,
right.
Cool and collected mind.
Just leveled ahead, you know. Make a sound decision.
That's it. You know, he had to reduce the stress levels before he went in and made that order. So,
quickly running down the UGA suspension. Sorry to bounce it back, but Trey Matthews,
yep,
was
gone.
The check fraud, double dipping scholarship checks. Yep, Uriah LeMay,
he's
freshman wide receiver, going to transfer. He was one of the four players in that check fraud scheme.
Uh huh.
Shaq Wiggins,
he's transferred. He's at Louisville.
Right. Chad Kelly.
I don't know who Chad Kelly is.
He was quarterback. He's with the Clemson Tigers. Hey. So long.
Yeah,
enjoy that, Dabo. We already say Trey Matthews? Yeah.
We did Trigger Trey. He is the guy that tipped the ball and lost the Auburn game. So,
nice.
And I think, isn't he at Auburn now? I think that's where he ended up transferring to, so... You know, good for you, Trey. You know, you won a game for the team that you ended up transferring to after trying to cash a benefits check twice.
I'm still heartbroken over that play, man. Auburn was the luckiest team in college football. You gonna tell me on a last second Hail Mary after Aaron Murray's finest fourth quarter in his career, tip pass, and then next week the return on the, was it field goal?
On the missed Bama field game? Goal, yeah. I mean, it's just... It's a team of destiny, and I honestly am surprised it didn't pull some kind of crazy miracle, you know, and beat FSU, you know, in the title game. It was just one of those seasons where the team was just, you know, they just had the luck go, you know, with them.
I guess so, man. Lightning struck twice, and they dominated that national championship game, man. If they would have called it after three quarters, that was Auburn. But
yeah.
Then the wheels fell off the bus, man. The special teams could not get their shit together.
Yeah, that was props to Florida State. You know, they stuck with the program, stuck with the game plan, and they're able to, you know, to make it happen, you know, in the fourth quarter. But you win some, you lose some, and that's a strong Florida State team that they lost to. They got a lot of, you know, had a lot of NFL, you know, draft picks come off that team.
It is fun to see FSU return to the top, man. It's been since, what, the early 90s? 91?
Yeah. I remember hating on those teams because they had damn Warwick Dunn.
Charlie Ward.
They had those stupid, you know, half-cut jerseys so they could show off their, you know, their six-packs. And they just had all that, you know, that mid-90s swagger before anybody even knew what swagger was.
That's right. With their flat-top haircuts.
With the herringbone gold chains.
Right.
Yeah, you know, listening to
Mustang 5.0s.
There you go. Maybe they're still rocking that. You know, but, yeah, it's good to see. It's always good to see. Always good to see, you know, another team come up. Because, I mean, really, the ACC had been, you know, just kind of nobody's really paying attention.
Yeah. La Tech?
Since, I don't, I mean.
Well, that was before they were ACC, though. Mike Vick's last year there. 2002,
2003. Early in this decade. But I mean, yeah, the ACC had really fallen off. But now, you know, hopefully, Florida State doing well. You know, I'd like to see, you know, a team like Miami get back in there. I mean, even a team like UNC and Duke, you know, kind of showing up, which is cool. You know, it's good to see other teams, you know, and other conferences kind of show up and, you know, kind of do something. It still doesn't do anything. You know, I mean, the state of Alabama still holds how many national titles over the last, you know, several years. And, you know, I mean, it's just, you know, facts are facts. I mean,
pretty
SEC
much
just won everything.
Before and after that last round of sanctions was their reign of dominance. Should we bounce it to the NFL? What are you feeling?
Yeah, the NFL sounds good. You know, segue right over for the college game.
Well, we're getting ready to wrap this up, but I wanted to talk about of course, Johnny Football. That fool. Should we talk about Johnny Football or should we talk about Sammy Watkins?
Hey, you know.
We kind of touched on Johnny Manziel last time.
Let's talk about Sammy Watkins. You know, shout out to Bad Mr. Frosty, former SOF crew. Nobody's going to get that.
SOF,
but,
what's happening?
Yeah, but, shout out to you, Frosty. Your boy, Sammy Watkins, doing big things. I had a great conversation with him the other day. I mean, let's preface by saying that Frosty is... I hope that he's jokingly delusional, but he's like a diehard Buffalo Bills fan. And so he came to me the other day and was talking about how Sammy Watkins is already looking like, a great pickup. So then he starts going on his off the deep end stuff, talking about he was the best pick in the draft. And I mean, hey, you could argue that. Yeah, you could try to argue that.
I mean,
maybe for fit, maybe for what he'll do in that system, what have you. Hey, maybe you could argue that. But then he started going on about how he's already one of the top threats in the NFL. And I said, yeah,
man.
Outside of Johnny Football, right? Yeah.
Man.
So that's we had a great little conversation there. He looks legit, though. I mean. I'll give him props. I thought that Sammy Watkins was going to be not a whole lot more than like a speed type of guy, but he had a.
The dude's a beast, man. The dude beat up the Bulldogs' awful secondary. But here's the thing, man. There's no one else in Buffalo. I mean, you got EJ Manuel. Shout out to Florida State.
Yeah, there you go.
You got so EJ Manuel throwing the ball to him. CJ Spiller. Whoa, what up, man? Clemson.
Yeah, hey, look at the Tiger connection. Shout out to John Nielsen.
Yep. What up? Yeah, Clemson. What up? The bestest. Milk Toast, what's happening? The aging Fred Taylor. Is Fred Taylor?
Fred Jackson.
Fred Jackson.
Former fullback, I think, and then he turned into a running back,
right?
Lead back.
Out of necessity.
There you go. But yeah, I mean, it's a pretty good team offensively. And defensively, they were going to be good, but then they lost, Kiko Alonso.
Marcel Darius is hurt.
Darius is out, so I mean, that's two big pieces that you're trying to miss. I mean, you don't recover easily, from losing, two defensive players of that caliber. So,
I wouldn't be surprised to see Mike Evans have a better first campaign than Sammy Watkins.
Where did Evans go?
I'm gonna pull that up right now. I just think he's a better receiver. Speaking of Johnny Football.
And I think here's the thing, what you're talking about Manziel, his numbers.
The Buccaneers, he's a Buccaneer.
So, that's right, because the Buccaneers decided they're just going to draft and sign every 6'6" and taller wide receiver possible.
You got to admit, though, man, Vincent Jackson and Mike Evans.
It's going to be
nasty. Time.
It's going to be hard to defend those guys. I mean, they're going to be, what they're going to do. You're just not going to be able to out-jump and out-position those two guys. They're just going to box you out. Yeah, that's how it's going to be.
They're just going to go Charles Oakley on you, man.
That's it. I mean, they're just going to win position in the paint, and they're going to yoke that ball down, and you can't do a thing about it.
Well, the good news is that they don't have a quarterback down there either.
No, they don't. Tampa Bay is kind of a hot mess right now.
McCown? Are they marching McCown? Because Freeman's gone.
Yeah, Freeman's out of there. I don't know. I don't know what they're doing. I have no idea what they're doing. I mean, it won't take much. All I got to do is throw the ball high. Throw it in the vicinity and, let those receivers make a play. So, they should be okay as far as that goes. But, Tampa's in a worse rebuilding situation than the Falcons are. So that says a lot.
Man, I honestly think the Falcons win the NFC South and make a deep run in the playoffs this year. Here's what we know, man. Roddy White's healthy again.
Yep.
We're actually being conservative, and we went in and repaired Julio's foot again.
Yep.
So, everyone forgets that Harry Douglas.
Great, great slot receiver.
Proven that he can handle the load of a number two, and he was even a number one for a period last year.
Yeah, yeah.
When we got hit big time.
When we were hit by injuries, he came up as a number one and did all right.
So here's the thing, man. Three... legitimate, two wide receiver ones and a legitimate wide receiver two on the field. An improved offensive line. We addressed that need in the offseason.
That's the biggest key to me. That's the thing we needed to address. I'm so happy we went with Jake Matthews with the first pick. The first pick in the first round.
So we move Sam Backache Baker out of the left tackle position.
I think he's going to start at left tackle just until Matthews gets up to speed, and then Matthews is going to take over at left tackle.
Which is hopefully quick, because Baker looks like a bum.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, we'll give him another chance. He was injured last season, so hopefully he comes back this year and plays, you know, plays decently enough. I mean, Matt Ryan just got, you know, just got murdered all last year. The offensive line was atrocious. I mean, nothing's going to work. Yeah, nothing's going to work out. So,
but I think with the improvements we made on the offensive line, the thing that worries me is that we look a little bit thin at linebacker.
Yep.
I think it was a terrible move to trade Akeem Dent for the backup quarterback. Who did you get?
I don't even remember who we got. It didn't make any sense to me. I mean, we were already, I think that was done after Witherspoon was declared out for the year.
Right.
So,
TJ Yates.
There you go. I mean, what are we going to do with that? I mean, what's the point, you know, of getting another backup quarterback? Because we drafted, what's his name, out of Duke last year.
It's an insurance plan for a quarterback that has missed 3 games over the last 4 years.
Yeah, and it just, yeah, to me, yeah, I mean, clearly there was a bigger need at linebacker. Who knows? I mean, maybe Dent wasn't picking up, you know, on things well enough, but he played well enough last year, I thought. So,
for sure. So, should we wrap this up? Should we keep rolling?
Hey, I'm good. We can keep, you know, on for a little bit. You know, I still got steam.
Why don't you reach into the list of topics here?
Yeah, I mean, but for the record, I still think the Saints are going to win the, you know, win the South. I think the Falcons will push for second. But, you know, Carolina still looks legit. So, I mean, you know, we're probably still another year or two out before
Cam Newton and who?
they got no receivers. You're right about that. I mean, they're going to be doing open tryouts. It's going to be like the Bulldogs taking, you know, open tryouts for the DB positions. I think the Panthers are going to go ahead and take fans out of the stands. And if you could run a decent 40, if you could show some hands, you might go ahead and get yourself a little contract to play receiver for the Panthers. So.
Exactly.
So, I mean, hey, let's wrap it up with something a little bit more light then. Talking about All-Star games, you know, with the baseball All-Star game just wrapping up recently, I think it brought to mind the idea of, you know, are there any All-Star games that you tune in for?
No, I haven't watched the baseball All-Star. My Asian Tourette's kicked in for a sec there. Our star game since I was like 15, man. They tried to make it relevant in the last few years where the winner gets home field advantage.
And that's stupid, right? To me. I get that you want to make it so the players play for something, but come on, man. Then stop letting the fans pick the players. If you're gonna take it serious, then you gotta let whoever's, you know, gonna be coaching those squads, let them pick.
Right. I don't watch any of the All-Star games, to tell you the truth. I can't even tell you the last time I watched a Pro Bowl was Junior Seau was still alive.
Rest in peace.
Yeah, rest in paradise. It was because of the quarterback challenge, though. Like, I wanted to watch that. I'm more entertained by the skills challenge, like watching these dudes bench press, you know, or whatever. What else do they do? They do, like... I don't even remember. But the point is that the skills challenges are more interesting than the game to me.
And I agree. I did, however, I watched the NBA All-Star game. I watched the Saturday festivity, like the big ones.
The rookie game's fun to watch.
I didn't watch that. I don't watch any of the actual games. I just, like you, I like watching the skills, you know, competition. So I watched a 3-point contest, and I watched the dunk contest. The dunk contest was a hot mess. I mean, it looked like you had a lot of promise because you had Paul George in there. You had Macklemore. You had some guys. You had John Wall. You had some names that you actually knew, you know, coming into the thing. But then they just screwed the whole thing up when they had, like, that team dunk off, and the one team didn't look like they even knew what was going on. So they just kind of decided they were going to wing it, and it really was obvious that they didn't know what they were doing and how they were going to try to, you know, compete.
Yeah, I didn't watch that. The last dunk contest I watched was when Nate Robinson put on the kryptonite shoes and jumped over Dwight Howard. So that was, man, 2005 maybe?
Yeah, that's been a while.
Nate Robinson was still a Nick.
Wow.
Man, it was a long time ago. The point is
that... The Natron Bomb.
The Natron Bomb. That always reminded me of Natron Means.
Yeah, getting back to the old San Diego Chargers, you know, along with Junior Seau. Yeah, Natron Means and Sean Salisbury, quarterback.
Right. But now, man, like, I think... I mean, how do you incentivize it, though? Like, baseball had the idea of making it worth something if you win to the, you know, the side that wins. But can you... I mean, you have to just make it prestige. I take that back. You know what? I watched when Blake Griffin jumped over the Kia. But
that was corny, too.
That was corn balls, man.
That was just stupid.
That was. So you can't incentivize it with money. You know, how do you make the title, you know, irrelevant again? It's like an archaic thing, kind of like, you know, boxing.
Yeah, here's the thing. I think that they should make the All-Star game about the skills competitions. I enjoyed it when they did, like, the... they did the drill where it was a two-man team, and you had to, you know, you had to dribble around some, you know, some targets. You had to pass the ball into, you know, through the, you know, through the tire.
Right.
And you got to lay the ball up. Yeah, you got to do all, you know, you got to do all the skill stuff. I like that. I think they should do more of that. I think that I forget who it was. I wish I could give credit to it, and I will if I recall it. But it was suggested that they should take the dunk contest. Like, it should do all of those things, and they should instead just replace it with, like, one-on-one or two-on-two or three-on-three, you know, pick-up style
games. It
was
Jalen Rose. Wasn't it Jalen Rose?
I think it was. I think that's genius. I don't like the one-on-one concept because then the guards would just... Yeah, it would just be mismatched. You'd get, right. You'd get a lot of the guards just dominating everybody, and the only guys that could hang would be, you know, like... the stretch four types, you know, right. The guys that could actually move around a little bit and, right. You know, and out jump the guards. But I think like a 2-on-2 or 3-on-3 tournament, I think that'd be dope. And I would watch that.
I would. So each team goes like NBA Jam and picks three players.
That's
or would
it.
You just nominate.
Yeah. Either,
you do a
either
round
let
robin,
them.
Or
yeah.
Would you do like an elimination style?
Let them pick or let the fans like pick a vote for like four captains or whatever.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Then let those guys pick their, you know, pick their running partners, and you could do it like a draft style. You know, you could do a snake, you know, snake draft or something, and so that way you don't just get a team that's loaded. You know, you don't end up, or you could keep it. You're talking about NBA Jam. You could keep it, you know, team centric. So the Clippers would end up with CP3, Blake Griffin, and DeAndre Jordan.
Right,
dude, I'd pay to see that. You know, I would watch that.
As long as they're playing the 21-by-1s.
Yeah, you know, maybe the fans in the stands may not, you know, may not be able to handle it. You play to 11, and you might have that three-pointer worth two.
Right, there you go. Check it out.
Yeah, there you go. But I think that, I mean, to, you know, for me, I mean, as a fairly casual, you know, observer of the NBA, that's something that would get me interested. I like the three-point contest. I think that they should have, you know, they should keep that. They should let the...
the women?
Or they should let like the old school retired players get in there too.
Oh,
I want to see Reggie get in there.
You know Larry's still knocking down 26.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, I want to see those guys. I want to see like the legends of the game that are still around that still want to play go against like the four or five best, you know, current NBA players.
I want to see, you know, Kenny Smith in his tornado shot.
Yeah, I want to see, you know, I want to see Larry Bird come out from, you know, from his you know, executive suite and beat everybody in the 3-point contest.
I like that they let the women's winner shoot against the men's. Do they do that in college?
I think they do that in college. Yeah,
that's dope though, because you know the size and strength matchup mismatch isn't relevant. Like,
yeah.
It's just pure who's the better knockdown three shooter.
And I think a lot of times the women, they have better form. Yeah, you know, so
exactly.
they can hang in there. So yeah, I mean, I think as far as All-Star games go, I mean, nobody watches the Pro Bowl. You know, again, you're just, you know, you really have nothing to do if you're watching the Pro Bowl. I think baseball is getting kind of whack too. I didn't watch anything baseball. I mean, I don't care for the home run derby.
I didn't watch none of
that. The game, the All-Star game itself is just beyond dumb to me. It doesn't make sense.
I thought it was cool that they let the captains choose their home run hitters though. That was cool.
Yeah, I mean, that's cool. But I mean, again, it just... I didn't tune into it. You know, I didn't even. It wasn't even one of the first three or four things that I looked up the day after.
Right.
It just didn't matter to
it's
me.
It's irrelevant.
Yeah. And yeah. You know, so I think that the NBA game is probably the closest thing that I still enjoy of the All-Star, you know, festivities. I mean, again, to be fair, I don't watch hockey, so I don't watch that All-Star game. game. Apparently, it's kind of close to what the NBA does as far as like skills competition. So that right there means it would probably be the second best thing I enjoyed, you know, of all the All-Star festivities.
You know, the MLS All-Star festivities are coming to Portland here.
Yeah, I don't know what they do other than they manage to get. I think Bayern Munich's going to come by here and just completely throttle the MLS All-Stars. So right. That'd be kind of cool to watch, just because, you know, I mean, you're basically going to see the German national team. I mean, I think half of them play for Bayern, so you're going to see just a complete, you know, it's going to be a complete slaughter on the, you know, on the pitch of Jill Wynn Field.
Are they doing a skills competition?
I don't know. I wish they would.
I would consider watching it.
Yeah.
All right, man. Should we go ahead and wrap it up? We're right at an hour.
Yeah, I think we're good. I mean, I don't think I have anything else random to really, you know, really talk about. So.
Well, right on. I wish we had like an email address or something to give out right now. Follow you on Twitter. What's your Twitter?
Nah, man. I mean, we'll save all that stuff for later. I mean, this is just a doing it for fun type of deal. So,
I had fun.
Once we get major, we'll start doing the shouts out and stuff like that for social media handles.
Word. The Audible Ale was delicious though.
Yeah, I'm enjoying it. You know, and we'll see what we come up with on the next recording. Hopefully, we'll be three deep on that. Give me a beat that's bang. Give me a beat that's banging. I'll bust till I'm deceased. Yeah.